Okay, thank you very much, everyone.
So this gets light.
The final thing on the agenda, as Nicholas called it, the super panel. I think that's quite a reflection of the sentiment in the dry bulk space at the moment. And before we start off, I'd like to ask the panel briefly, is there anyone in the panel who is not bullish about the next couple of years in the dry bulk market? Okay, that's what I thought. So it kind of the first question that I'd like to ask the panel, I've had this feeling before, as late as in 2013-14. I think the entire world, or at least the shipping world, was bullish about the dry bulk market. Finally, we were coming out of, I think at the time, a 20-year low. And we all got it wrong. So my first question to the panel is really, what are we getting wrong this time? Gary, why don't you start?
Yeah, thanks, Herman. I think, as always, there's a lot of differences. And one thing here was there was a real focus on building a lot of eco ships on the back of higher fuel prices and being a low-cost provider on that basis. And also, you know, back then looking at a reversion to the mean, reversion to the rates, you know, if not 2007, 8, but back to really high levels. We've come through quite a, you know, challenged period here. And a big difference here is where we are in terms of the supply side. I mean, we are going to be around 5% of the order book by the end of the year. This year, in the first half of the year, delivered 365 ships. Next year, the entire year on the books is like 250. And that's before any slippage or cancellation. So I think on the supply side, we have a completely different dynamic. Mm. The other thing is we've come out of, on the demand side, from zero demand growth in 15 and then crept our way back up around GDP parity. Whereas before, we were actually up around 4 or 5, and we were adding supply side against kind of that running track, running rate. So I think there's a lot of differences between now and 2013.
Mm. Anyone else in the panel have any, would like to admit any mistakes they did in the past? Or
oh, yes.
Everyone's just looking down. You know, it's time to face the music.
You all kind of to have to take our part of that blame. But maybe you should also add that the financing world looks quite differently right now than what it did in 2013. And we know how countercyclical the banks are. So so today, on you can hardly get financing at, say, maybe loan to value of 50%, which is 20% above scrap value. So. And you maybe have to pay 325 basic points. So it's totally different financing environment as well. Mm.
So it's a bit scary, actually, sitting here and everybody kind of agrees that we're in for a good run going forward. And then, you know, you really need to ask yourselves, what's the black swan? Because the black swan always pops up when you least expect it. And I don't have the answer to it, obviously. But I think, you know, the situation that we have one customer in the dry bulk market, representing more than 40% of the demand, and that customer has is decided by 7 people in Beijing what they want to do, turning things on and off. I think that's the biggest black swan we have in our market, and that's something that can turn overnight. Mm.
Lucas,
last time also we had several let's say funds or companies who entered opportunistically in the market, and they did massive orders, which basically was one of the main reasons for destroying the market later on. This time, we have also certain risks ahead of us, which are related to the position from where we start. So we start where all the public markets are extremely high. So everybody, and also China, is performing well. But there are substantial risks on what will be done in the next couple of years or 3 years. So the placement of new orders has a substantial risk. So there is, let's say, somehow an aversion of placing too many new orders.
I have a different view. I mean, maybe we are a bit the same place now as we were in the start of 13. Remember, the market had a very good run through 13 and into 14, before it became bad in 15 and 16.
Mm.
And maybe that's also where we are today, that we will see a run for a year or two. And then depending on ordering, you will see it come back down again. So you need to think about the cycles. But as opposed to in 2013, okay, the market had been bad, but on and off, I mean, 10 was, there were good rates at some periods there. If you look back now for the last 5 years, I mean, the market has been bad all through 15 and 16 and start of 17. So we have a low order book now because we've had a very bad period for many years, which has also limited companies in doing ordering.
Mm. I mean, it's quite an interesting comparison to 2013, because obviously we did have quite a significant level of restocking on the iron ore side, which we've obviously seen also this year. I guess the difference now is that you have the steel margins being the highest since at least January 2014. The spread on quality iron ore, I think, is the highest since November 2011. You know, is there a different story on the demand side this time around? Is that kind of why you're being bullish, or it's pure, or is it purely kind of due to the low order book?
I mean, basically, China has taken quite a few measures domestically to cut its domestic capacity, both in the coal as well as the iron ore mines. We've had recently closure of induction furnaces, which use scrap. And that has boosted the iron ore imports, because you have the steel mills basically wanting higher iron ore quality in order for them to also maximize their output because of the profitability margins that you just mentioned. Mm. So the stimulus that China has offered is starting to pass through the industrial sector as well. And you see an overall boom in the steel products output.
Mm.
But it will be. This is not going to be a straight line. Obviously, we will see a lot of volatility. People should not be shocked. If I mean, look at the FFA curve. It's really in backwardation. Last year, November, first quarter traded at 4,800 on a Cape, delivered at 9.5. Right now, I think Q1 trades at 9.5 against a spot index of 19. And I think we should be prepared. It will be restocking, destocking. Steel prices will move up and down. But we should. I think it will be more volatility than we have been used to in the past. And it's, which is also good that we. It's good that it's not a straight line up, because then I think we. The order book will remain fairly decent, at least for a period of time.
Hmm.
I think there's no doubt we will see volatility. I mean, we're seeing it all the time, and this is a tradable market. And this goes for the way we do our business, so trading the ships, but also on the stocks. I mean, if you see the volatility we've had on the dry bulk stocks this year, it's been quite enormous.
Hmm. Gary, you're moving Eagle Bulk into more, call it, trading than you've done in the past. Is that due to the increased volatility you see in the spot market? Do you kind of, what's the reason behind that move?
Yeah, so it's new for Eagle, but I've been doing it for the last 20 years in my career. So when I joined Eagle, it was with a clear view to move from being a tonnage provider to an owner operator. You know, my view is that if you have the balance sheet and the capital committed, you know, to leave that premium, that margin on the table by reletting your ships to other parties, you know, why would you do it if you have the capability? So we've built that out at Eagle with a view to effectively, actively manage and garner additional, you know, revenue over and above index returns. So, but clearly, to Jens's point, you know, we welcome volatility because it's hard to trade on, you know, $200-$300 a day. So that movement gives us the ability to hedge and create this asymmetric upside that we then are able to support the revenue stream on the own fleet. But we're owner first, and then the operator is there to support that ownership model.
Mm. So kind of in the near term, speaking about volatility, obviously you've seen 1-year time charter rates have moved actually quite a lot during the year. We touched, I think, 19 in the early part of the year, and it came down on the Capes, and now they're back up again. What do you see in near-term volatility for Q4? Do you think expectations are fair for Q4, or do you think we're set up for a similar thing that we saw in Q1, where the market was better than what people expected? How do you sense the expectations are in the market now?
We think that, from also the chatters that we are receiving the recent, let's say, weeks, we think that the market will be strong, substantially strong during this last quarter. And this, I think, will help several companies like ours to approach the break-even point and move to the profitability, which is very important after so many years of very low market. Mm.
Anyone else who would like to stick their head out on the near-term market?
I think it's the visibility is not that great. So, but I think there's a fair chance. We saw, as you said already, the first quarter. We saw the expected better market in the second quarter came in the first quarter, and it may be that the third quarter proves to be the best quarter compared to the fourth quarter. But I think the direction is up, but there's going to be volatility as we move along. Mm.
I think what we saw both in March, April, and what we are seeing now is strong steel margins, strong commodity prices. All the various commodities, or the major at least, that we are transporting are attractive at the same time. And where we are on utilization overall on the fleet, you really need all the commodities to have a positive flow at the same time to see the strong rates that we see now. Mm. So those spikes will come up and down, and maybe Jens are right that we will see stronger numbers now than we will see November, December, for instance. Hmm.
I think also the inventory levels at ports point to a stronger market in Q4. Coal inventories, for example, in India are 45% less than what they used to be last month. Coal inventory levels also in China are low. They're not at the highs that they have been this year. Steel inventories are also quite low, given that there is quite a bit of output and quite a bit of profitability in the steel mills. So all these are sort of leading indicators that we are heading for a strong, at least, October, November. Hmm.
I think another interesting element is that the bunker prices have increased. And if you look at the Capes, for instance, a change from 250 to 320 has also an impact on sort of when a vessel will speed up, and mean that the upside potential is larger now when you see bunker prices going up.
Mm. So kind of taking, there's been quite a few Capital Link seminars, for example, this year, and we tend to discuss the supply-demand side of the equation, utilization, expectations, but what do you think is the most under-discussed point about the dry bulk market? Is there anything in particular that you are surprised that haven't been debated more on either the supply or the demand side? Herman?
I think it's going to be very interesting to see what's happening with low sulfur in 2020. I think that's not like the ballast water treatment system. This is for real. And this will have an impact. And it's very, very interesting. I think scrubber is too early. So it will be very interesting to see how the spread between heavy fuel oil and low sulfur, what will happen with that. So maybe Bugby should be invited back and talk about this echo story again. I think it will do something if you have a vessel 17, 18 year old, taking her through a special survey, doing steel renewal. You know she's not the most steel fuel efficient vessel. Will you really want to keep her or scrap her? So I think it will have an impact on scrapping, regardless.
I wouldn't also say that the ballast water treatment will not have a substantial effect on the trade, because one of the points that we know now is that, let's say, U.S. Coast Guard does not give any more deferrals on implementation of this equipment to vessels. Now, the market is I mean, we feel that it's better because it is reaching the break-even point or of the companies, but it doesn't mean that it's good. So if you are to install a ballast water treatment plant in order to trade to United States in 2018 or 19, or the following years, I mean, in order to trade globally, and you have a substantially old vessel, let's say older than 15 years old, you need to consider, am I going to install a ballast water treatment in 19 and then in 2020 to check what am I going to do with the other equipment, or if the vessel, for example, is a very low consumption, old 2003, 2002 vessel, how am I going to compete with MGO, the marine gas oil, with vessels which were constructed from better shipyards or eco ships in 2014 or 2015. So all these stories, I tend to believe all the technological parameters will play an important role in the expansion of the cycle as we feel that it is starting right now.
Mm. Christos?
I actually couldn't agree more with Herman. I believe that the low sulfur regulation that will be enforced from 1st of January 2020 is a game changer for our industry. I mean, ship owners will suddenly have to face potentially double the bunker bill that they were paying before in order to basically comply with the new regulation. And this relates to the point that was made earlier by Birgitte as well, that a higher bunker price environment will force ship owners to actually find a new optimal steaming speed, which is a lower steaming speed than what was before, and therefore effectively the net supply of vessels decreases effectively overnight. People are also going to start thinking about scrubbers. Now, installing a scrubber is not an easy operation. The cost of the scrubber is not low, and this is an industry that has been capital starved for the last 2 or 3 years. Therefore, the decision that ship owners will have to make whether to install scrubber, how to comply with the new regulation, what is the spread that we're going to see between the marine diesel oil and the high sulfur oil, which is going to affect the decision to install a scrubber or not, are all factors that are going to create inefficiencies in our industries, and we need inefficiencies in order to see also a high freight rate environment. So I really think that 2020 onwards and anticipation as we're leading towards 2020 will be a game changer for dry bulk.
Mm. I think, you know, last time we all talked about the eco story, it turned out to be a little bit of fake news, but this time it may be for real. But I think it's a little bit dangerous already now to rush to the shipyards to order new ships because of the new eco story.
Mm. And I'm kind of curious to understand as well. I mean, with all due respect, after many years of a challenging market, it's not like you have excess cash to invest into scrubbers. I mean, how do you plan for this? Are you just taking a wait-and-see approach? Does it mean that you're going to be more conservative in the coming upturn in terms of repaying some of your shareholders? How do you think about it going forward?
I think it's not easy to retrofit scrubbers at all. Very costly. But I would imagine that those owners who are so stupid to consider ordering new capacity, they will ask at least that the vessel is scrubber ready. Okay? The Chinese will always say that they are scrubber ready, which is fake news, and the Japanese haven't really prepare themselves. So, but it takes a lot of space. It does something with the design. This scrubber is not a small little thing. So I think scrubber will, and nobody want to be the first one on the block to invest in scrubbers. So I think that will take some time. Maybe one day it will be cheaper. It will be when it's mass produced one way or the other. But I think the first 2 to 3 years after 2020, it will be low sulfur, period. Mm. For the vast majority of the 10,500 dry bulk vessels over 10,000 deadweight.
I definitely agree, but I want to add also something, that there is also a review date for this regulation, I think, in 2018. So let's not assume that for sure this will be implemented in 2020. Mm. The second point is that, of course, I agree that there will be no scrubbers installed. period.
I mean, I have to admit, I find it a bit fascinating that you're discussing things that is happening in 2020. I mean, looking 3 years back, it seems like a lifetime, at least for companies, it has been, a three-year period. Going a bit more back to the short-term focus again, Martin Stopford showed earlier today that over the last year, you've had a significant increase in the dry bulk fleet and as well for your fleets, but if you look at it in a long-term perspective, you're really just back to square one in 2000, before China came into the WTO in 2001, and obviously you know the story. How far do you feel like this recovery has legs to walk? I mean, at what stage do you pull the red flag and say enough is enough? We're taking profit, we're moving on. What kind of variables are you looking at? I would actually like to start with Gary and then move down the panel and see.
Yeah, I think, you know, from a standpoint of supply demand, we're in the early innings here. So we're still delivering a significant number of ships this year, and next year it really falls off dramatically. And as some of my peers said, you know, there's a real focus on what happens on the supply response. And obviously a stronger market will be greater. I mean, so far this year, 16 Ultramaxes have been ordered, you know, less than 0.5%. If you run that out, you know, and you include scrapping against a robust demand environment, you know, that would be great. Where do we sign up? So we could be very much in early innings, but it's, you know, every single day we come to the office and you need to look, where's supply, where's demand, where's the volatility, and ultimately, you know, make those calls. But if you believe in a you know, general GDP increase, you know, like IMF has, and the supply side where we are, I think we're in the early innings of a recovery.
Birgitta?
Yeah, I agree that we are in the earlier part of the stage. You said, where do you say that enough is enough? I mean, looking at asset prices have moved pretty much already from the bottom. Maybe now they are more on or slightly below new building parity, and they will at some point probably go above. As rates are good now, you will have some value of getting a vessel in the water. But I think it's important to use the new building parity also as a guideline. Looking at assets.
In 2011, from 2011 until now, the supply increased by about 35%. While the demand was increased by about 25%, which means that there is a big gap of 10% which has to be covered somehow in order to have good markets. And right now, we cannot speak about profitable markets because most of the companies, all the companies are still unprofitable. So first of all, we need to see, a stable environment that will last for, 1 year to be developed in 2018, in a new shipping cycle to be developed towards 2019 and to be influenced by the technological parameters which will eventually expand the cycle in 2020, hopefully, or 2021.
In Songa Bulk, we have never really solved the demand story. We believe in the supply side. And the good thing with supply is that you have a certain visibility there. And it's supply-driven turnaround, you have some lead time. But when people start to order, that will be at least our red flag, and then it's time to exit.
Again, I'm like-minded with Herman. I mean, this year you basically had 32 million deadweight tons of deliveries year-to-date approximately and 10 million tons of scrapping. So the net growth was approximately 22 million. That's 2.7%. On an annualized basis, that's 3.5%. Clarkson's predicted that demand 2017 in dry bulk cargoes overall is 3.7%. Therefore, it's marginally a positive utilization increase. Now, what's interesting is that where we stand right now, the supply growth for 2018 looks to be smaller. As basically right now, total order book is at around 63 million deadweight tons, and that also includes about 13 million deadweight tons that have been ordered and confirmed this year. Now, there are another 12 million tons that are in LOI stage, and have been unconfirmed. Therefore, if those are confirmed, then suddenly the total supply jumps from 63 to 75, or 9%, 9.something% of the total fleet. If we have an increased number of orders, and at the same time demand for cargoes doesn't grow above those numbers, then it's a good sign that maybe we should start exiting.
I'd just like to make a few points. I mean, the China growth story is basically over. We're coming from the worst market in 30 years. The demand expectations are maybe 3% for the next couple of years, and the supply is about 1%. They're still working to close the gap. I think the market, we're talking about the recovery, but the recovery we're talking about more is more like the market in the 90s. We're not talking about the market that was there between 2003 and 2008 when we saw Capesize market at $200,000 and we saw $70,000 on an Ultramax or Supramax. So I think we're talking about a totally different thing, and we need to be very careful to rebalance this thing. Otherwise, it could go wrong again as it did in 2013 if people become too optimistic. And then,
But we know that there are more experts on China than there are inhabitants in China. So that the way I see it is that China is committed to cap their coal production, according to the Paris Agreement, at 4 billion tons. They are not able to change the energy mix that fast. Coal was doom and gloom 2 years ago. They had 13 serious accidents in China in coal mines this year, killing more people than been killed in terrorist attacks in Europe in 2017. It gets more and more attention. I think the substitution and sensitivity is very interesting. I'm not entirely agreeing with you, Jens, that the growth China story is over. I think there are a lot of uncertainty about China, and I like the fact that there are few people making decisions compared to India, where you have quite a few making decisions. So I think that's a positive thing for China in a way.
It could turn both ways, you know. Yeah. That's the
Yeah, I think it will add volatility, but that you can see really strong periods and then you can see weaker periods as well. And remember that the last few years, the hydro power production has been pretty strong. We are now back to normal levels, and we have low coal stocks, as was mentioned earlier. So in a dry, cold winter scenario, there would be a strong need for imports for a period of time at least. But that will add to the volatility in the market. Mm-hmm.
Look, the mix of fuels cannot change as Herman said, so easily in the economy, in any economy. And the coal is a strategic fuel for China. And the coal that is produced in China is very important because they produce something like 70 to 80% of their electricity. In order to substitute that, it will take substantial time. The second point is that the coal in China is of very bad quality, and the imported coal is only a minor fraction, less than 10% of what they consume. So I don't think that China can, work without coal. I mean, they will continue to work with coal. Of course, they may import in the future more coal. And also, they cannot work without steel because they have all these plants. Now, what about China, what we like is that this uncertainty that you all said, that this uncertainty that can create backtracks, and that can cause and that cannot allow people to order easily new build vessels in the future. This is very important for this market to recover.
Just to put the coal story into perspective, China uses about 3.8 billion tons of coal every year, and they import about 250 million tons. So, you know, a change from import to domestic production could make a big change on the demand side on dry bulk.
I think it's also worth, I mean, clearly China is the headline, and as was mentioned earlier, China is over 40% of major bulk demand. But on the minor bulks, which is almost half, you know, China is about 14%. Mm. So clearly it's an incredibly important customer. But I think there's also a story about developed economies recovering Europe and what have you. And as that adds in as well, I think that's really important to focus on. But of course, China is the headline, and if China gets a cold, dry bulk suffers, no doubt. But there are other stories out there as well.
Mm. But I think it's also fair to say, on the demand side, it's not really only been China this year, and it's not only been coal and iron ore. It's actually been kind of across the board, more or less firing on all cylinders. Is that kind of an expectation that we should have going forward? What particular part of the demand side are you most comfortable about, and what are you most concerned about if you take the key commodities?
I think one that's seems very robust is the growth in the soybean trade. It's China has been, it's been 12% annualized over the last number of years, as for feed, for soybean oils, for production as well. And it seems like, as the middle class and a change in lifestyle there, that growth is going to continue. And then again, as we see GDP start to inch up in developed areas, we see things, more minor bulks around, cement is moving much more, and more construction and things like that. So, those tend to be, more steady. Scrap metal is very much a product of steel price. And of course, now with steel prices being high, we've seen a big increase in that. And pet coke trade also on the minor bulk side has been very robust, particularly into India, which is long haul trade. So, to your point, there's been a lot of different commodities where we've seen increases this year.
Yeah. Anyone else would like to add anything? Okay, then I'm going to ask the panel one final question. And it's really, if anyone of you have the urge to highlight anything particular about your company, and then I'll open up the questions from the audience. And I guess the next step is the bar. So anyone would like to make a point about where your company stands out, or is it just by any rival company in this recovery?
I guess we're the only one who stands out, which stands out the most, because we don't own any vessels. So we don't have the confidence or the resources to own ships. We rather try to make money off the ship than on the ship.
I think we can offer liquidity to investors. Someone I talked to mentioned that just a few days ago we were only shy to a small company called Statoil on top traded shares on Oslo Stock Exchange. And you can also trade on Nasdaq. But I think with the volatility you've seen on dry bulk, you have definitely seen also investor interest coming into the share.
Mm.
What we can offer is the lowest cash break even. So... So we are profitable in today's markets, and we like assets more than people. So we have 4 employees and own 15 vessels. So that's so that's what we can offer the investors. And we think, we are not management driven. We think like investors, and we are aligned as management team.
So like Jens, we like to make money off the ships, but on the ships as well. But we're the only company that's focused exclusively on the Supermax, Ultramax, and being an active owner-operator, having that homogeneous fleet, and gives us efficiencies to garner value off of the market.
For us, for Safe Bulkers, we are not investors. We are a shipping company, a real shipping company with a long history, a very low break-even point, an even lower cash break-even point, with substantial liquidity, with a big fleet, and our stock is recovering fast. What we are trying to do right now in this period of time is that we are replacing, let's say, more expensive parts of our capital structure with, let's say, cheaper capital structure, reducing and deleveraging in order to be able to offer even lower break-even point, and which allow us to be one of the lead players in the next shipping cycle.
If you want to invest in a combination of what has already been mentioned before by my co-panelists, then Starbucks is your play, because we have a very large company, so we can offer liquidity, as Birgitte mentioned. We are evenly spread amongst Kamsarmaxes, Ultramaxes, Supramaxes, but we have also a very strong presence on the Capesize sector. We have 25 large vessels in our fleet. We have quite high operating leverage. However, we also have one of the highest cash balances in the industry, should things not go the way we hope they will go. And as also Lucas said, we are a shipping company. We pride ourselves of having also a very sophisticated shipping management platform. And we are trying to keep our OPEX as low as possible, not on the burden of our vessels, which is proven by the RightShip status that we have. That's about it.
I agree with Christos. they are trying to follow us.
You're doing a good job on the OPEX level. I give you that, Luca.
Very good. So I think we'll open up for questions from the audience, if there are any. If not, we've done a great job. So, yeah.
Hi. Do you have any thoughts on the China shutdown this winter, the environmental shutdown with steel production?
How are you going to see the China shutdown? Is it going to impact the dry bulk trade? And how are you going to see it impacting your revenues and the general outlook for 2018?
It could be a little bit, that could be potentially early restocking, but you also understand it, this is Hebei province, which my understanding is that vast majority of the iron ore is domestically produced to that province. No, I think it could be the reason that we have seen what we have seen on the restocking lately. So, so it means that most likely we will see quite a brisk activity at least until November at some point of time, and then you could potentially face some destocking. But I'm saying that what I understand is that province is well supported by domestic iron ore, rather than imported iron ore.
Any other questions?
Mr. Tavlidis.
Yeah, please.
Yes, sir. I tried to catch the attention of the previous panel, but failed. Maybe I'll be a bit lucky this time. I'm always an optimist. I believe that, you know, the glass is far full rather than half empty. But part of the future success in business is to not to repeat the mistakes of the past. On that particular regard, does any of you have any rough idea, even in terms of a guesstimate, of the bloodbath and the catastrophe caused by the creation of the KG companies? Because we hear about what has been lost by the banks. I think we've got two banks who are literally technically insolvent in Germany. But I just want to know how many ships were flooded in the market indiscriminately. What was the real damage? What was the real damage done? Thank you.
Maybe the moderator.
I think in the dry bulk, the KG was not what destroyed the market. I think it was the U.S. Investors who, instead of the typical ship owner ordering 5 ships at a time, they ordered 50 at a time. So that's what happened in 2013.
I think the container industry in itself, I think Lloyd's List has an article on it, how last year they lost $5 billion, and in 2009, I think it was $19 or $29 billion. So it's obviously quite a significant amount of capital that has been lost in the German KG market.
And I also think that the German KG market did something with available financing from German banks, which is helpful. Lack of it.
Any final questions? Niklas, would you like to have some closing remarks? Or?
Well, I will simply like to thank everybody. It's 6:25, and this room has been full and vibrant since 8:30 this morning. So I think I would like to thank all of you for being with us today and making this event a great success. Of course, I'd like to thank the panelists, our partners at Farnley's, and everyone else who has contributed, Plateau and Clarkson's, everybody, all the sponsors. Frankly, it has been a great event. I'm very proud that I think we have held this event for 10 years, and this has been the best. And if you allow me to say very humbly, We are holding this event within the London International Shipping Week. I would challenge you to find another event being held this week with more owners. So, and at the end of the day, shipping is all about the owners because they are the ones who practice everything. So you want owners, bankers, financiers, investors. Here we are. Come to Capital Link. Thank you very much to everybody.